Welcome to the newest podcast from the Cosmic Circus Multiverse, Across the Queerverse. I know what you're thinking, another podcast from the Cosmic Circus family of writers and creators? I totally understand, but this one is special to quite a few of us as we're going to focus on queer representation in all forms of media. For the queers, by the queers. If you don't know my voice already, I'm Brian Kitson, head writer at the Cosmic Circus and Cosmic Circus Broadway, and I'm a queer man. Gay if you want to put a label on it, but come on, it's 2024, who needs labels anymore? Unless it's a food product, please put a label on it.
Please.
On today's episode, I have one of my favorite people in the entire world, a fellow queer from the Cosmic Circus, and one of the many rotating faces that you will see on this podcast. Joining us is Izzy Friedman. How you doing?
Hi. Oh my God, I'm one of your favorite. Thank you. You're one of mine. Hi, I'm Izzy Friedman. I am queer in a way that I'm quickly realizing only people who majored in women and gender studies can understand. And that just
or if you saw pretty or you saw Powerpuff Girls, as we've determined,
or if you saw Powerpuff Girls growing up, that general vibe is sort of what I got going on.
Thank you so much. And obviously you're going to be one of our many hosts because we are co-hosts in this. So there's going to be like four or five of us. We're going to be rotating, we're going to be coming in, we're going to be talking about all the good queerness in film and in television. And I am so excited to start this journey with you.
I know. I love to talk about this stuff. I should probably talk about this stuff a little bit less with the amount that I talk about it.
But now we're giving you a platform to do it on.
Exactly. Thank you for enabling me. Life is so good.
I hope that our listeners are ready for when we have an interview with the Vampire Podcast, because I think it's just going to be 3 hours of you monologuing.
And it will be. And you better prepare. I'm going to dress Shakespearean. I'm going to have the fake teeth in. You're going to have to edit out me mumbling around the teeth.
I mean, that's fair. I've seen ones now that they actually like they descend. I don't know if it's like a little robot or something, but like
I don't know how they do that, but I need to purchase them swiftly, post haste. They will be mine.
So on today's episode, we're going to give everybody a spoiler warning. Spoiler alert, if you have not seen Heartstoppers Season 3, you probably don't want to listen to this, or maybe you do. We will be discussing what happens in the show, as well as Volume 5, I'm pretty sure it is. Volume 4, Volume 5
pretty
of
sure.
The books. But we are going to break down everything that came to Heartstoppers Season 3, and maybe even look towards the next chapter. So I'm going to start real big.
Let's go.
How does season 3 compare to season 2 for you?
Okay. My thing with Heartstopper is that I always have to be in the right mood for it. Because if I'm okay. not in the right mood for Heartstopper, it just feels like a very adorable PSA. And if I feel in the right mood for Heartstopper, I'm like, and their life is like how my life is. You know, like I get really emotional over it. I think that season 2 made me slightly more emotional.
Okay.
But I think that season 3, I don't know, if season 3 was very fun for me personally.
Okay.
I felt like there was a lot of heavy moments, but I feel like there was also like a lot of humor that I liked. Like that one scene where they all just meow, which was apparently
yes.
improv. It's like they had a lot of
it?
Little yeah, it was improv. But they had a lot of little moments like that where I was like, okay, this is fun for me. But what about you?
So the thing about, I think I said this in one of our first queer podcasts, because we've done two now, but it was on our other channel. And that's kind of what stemmed into this, like, we have a platform that we could use and let's do it.
Please.
That I was very late to the Heartstopper game. Like, it was after season 2 came out. I binge watched season 1 and season 2. So, like, I'm relatively a Heartstopper virgin, you know, which is saying something when this season deals with losing your virginity.
Hey, oh, it sure does.
But I thought that this season, what it was interesting is that the tone changed, but it also kept the same feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it still felt like the same little, like, comforting sort of, I don't know, it kept, I don't even know how to describe it, because for me, it kind of felt like there's like a tone of Heartstopper, which is, this is the problem. Usually by the end of the episode, the problem will be resolved. Sometimes it'll take a couple of episodes. But at the end of the day, we're all here for each other. That is kind of the core of Heartstopper for me. And it was there in season 3 as well. But you're right. It did definitely take a tone shift in terms of, oh, no, we're talking about like going to a mental health facility because
yes.
you cannot stand looking at your body, you know?
Yes. I think it was interesting because, like, we've kind of seen the struggle with Charlie throughout season one and season two, especially the depression, you know, and just kind of how the depression sits in and how that affects how his relationship with food. But this mm-hmm. season, I was just like, I was crying in like every episode because I was like, you're watching this character that you've loved for like two seasons yeah. now, and he's hitting what I would refer to kind of as a psychologist as like that real world problem of like. Before it was kind of like we're dancing around this like young love and like a lot of us older queers, we don't get to have that young love experience.
Yeah.
So you're watching that. You're like, oh, this is so heartwarming. This is so great. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, you are going to a mental facility because you can't handle the struggles of life.
Yeah. And one thing that I thought was so interesting that I talked about that I actually really love that they talk about is how that can really affect the people who are around you who are trying to be there for you. You know, the fact that we have Nick and Charlie in this a very sweet relationship, you know, that I think could be very cathartic for a lot of older queer viewers. But also, Nick has to struggle with the fact that he wants to be there for this guy, but he cannot fix all of his problems. And also, he has to live his own life. I really liked that. I really liked that they included a scene where Nick got really frustrated at Charlie and walked away and then came back and apologized afterwards because it felt more grounded in reality than just like this guy who is always going to be patient and the perfect boyfriend, you know? I really like that they dealt with that too. So it felt like this whole, I don't know. It's just, oi, what a shift.
The thing, I know what scene you're talking about with Nick, and I'll say this in the books. In the books, Nick is very much the golden retriever. Like, there's
yes.
not a lot of moments where he has this like negative aspect. But in one of the novellas, the one where they're getting ready to go to, he's getting ready to go to college, he does get angry, and they get into a fight, and you know they ultimately kind of they break up for a moment, and they have this realization later. But you see this of like how much it impacts him in the books, like the graphic novels, they play with that a little bit. But like the show was like embracing of the fact that. This does, like, someone's mental health isn't just impacting them. It's impacting everyone around them.
Yeah. And I really like that because I think this show is so much about community. You know, it's about chosen family. It's about being there for each other. I mean, another core part of this season was about how, yes, your romances are important, but your friendships are also deeply important. You cannot just have your one person. You need to have community. And so the fact that we got to see Charlie go through this, and then we got to see like all of his friends make a video for him and how it affected each one of them. And then also how it affected himself and his family and his boyfriend specifically. But I thought that that was really great because you see a lot of queer romances that are kind of just about, hey, here's me, here's my partner. It's just about that. And this isn't that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that because I think that's something that they expanded on from the books. And I love that Alice Oseman wrote, I don't know if they wrote they wrote every episode. Okay. But you really get to see that, like, this expansion in this format of like, how does it impact other people? And one of the people you really got to see was how Tao really hit him hard. And you really don't see him, you see him be angry, you know, but you don't see him be sad, you know?
Yeah.
And he was really sad. And through that video, I actually found myself kind of tearing up a few times. I was like, you're making this video because you feel like you've lost your person, even though you have your partner. And you and Al are very good. You're very strong. But like your person has always been Charlie. And Charlie is now gone for like 3 months.
I thought that that was so important because, I think that as a queer person, I honestly think that a cornerstone of being queer is actually how you view your friendships. And how it changes the way that you define family for yourself. I think that that's such a huge part. Of course, it's about like who you love or who you're attracted to or who you're not attracted to. And like this great, beautiful romantic love that you can have. But it can also be about the fact that you kind of, in a lot of situations, need to build your community from the ground up. You need to find other people that are like you. Or even if you don't have to build your community from the ground up, you still want to be around like-minded people who can all be your person in various ways. So I really liked all the different explorations of that in this season. I like that you're right. He lost his person. Even though his girlfriend is right there, he still wanted his friend there. I really liked that. Imogen has her whole thing where she kind of realizes that, and I've been waiting for her to realize this. She realizes she's probably, you know, a lesbian or at the very least not attracted to men. You know, when she's with her friends, she kind of goes, oh, but I do like us better as friends. Like, we helped each other realize something important about ourselves, and maybe it will lead somewhere else eventually. But she has that scene where they're like, I like us better as friends. And I kind of like that too, because I feel like that is a cornerstone of a lot of queer relationships, you know? Like, this is the friendship where maybe things get a little at some point, but
Right.
it's still grounded in friendship. So I really liked that so much of this was just about how Charlie's community is there for him, but also how it impacts each of them, regardless of whether or not they're romantically involved.
I think that as we grow up, we're always taught that romantic relationships are the most important. And I haven't been in a relationship in like 7 years, but like I remember being like finding your person, and like finding that next person, and like you have friends, but like your energy goes towards that relationship. And I had a friend, I have a very close friend who back in like April started talking. It might have been a little bit earlier than that, but like April sent me a video specifically because it was right around Easter about how like friendships in the queer community are almost more important than romantic relationships
Yeah.
because they're the people that you really they're each one has its importance, but like friendships are very important. And I think that was when I started to like change my dynamics of being like, oh, like you don't put all your eggs in one basket because the other baskets can carry more egg. There is like this difference,
I like
especially in the
that.
queer community, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I really like that that phrase. You don't put all your eggs in one basket because the other ones can carry. I
Yeah,
like
carry
that. I
more
like the way you
eggs.
phrase that. I love the way you phrase that. Well, it's interesting because this season also delves a little bit more into a aromantic asexual character and his whole vibe
Yes.
being that, hey, I don't necessarily like, I love that you guys have romantic relationships with each other, but please don't make that the cornerstone of your life because I'm here too. I in my deep complex tapestry of whatever queerness I have going on, the spectrum of asexuality and aromanticism is kind of in there. And so I loved that. I loved that there was a, oh, I love that there was a scene where he's just like, hey, I'm kind of tired of explaining this. You are my friend. If you would like to understand me more, look it up. And then we can have a,
Yes.
that was great because we always have to explain ourselves as queer people, but he didn't in that scene. And I thought that was great. But I thought that that added another layer to like being queer doesn't necessarily always is a personal thing too. You know, it doesn't always have to be about necessarily finding your romantic person. It can also be about your relationship to yourself. It can also be about who you're not attracted to. You know, there's a lot of layers there. So I really love that there's an Arrow Ace character.
I love that you said that because when I saw that scene where it's not Toby is the actor's name.
I call him Toby in my head too.
Isaac.
Isaac, yes.
When Isaac says that, of just being like, as a therapist, I hear that all the time from I work pretty exclusively with a lot of queer people, and it's just
Love that
the
for you.
yeah, it's one of my specialties. I worked really hard to be part of that, but there is this point where they're just like, I don't want to have to explain it to more people. And I always tell them, you don't have to. You don't have, if somebody loves you and somebody cares about you, they're supposed to put in the work to understand
Yeah.
you. And like, it's not your job to like have to like carry that burden of being like, I'm, asexual, I'm aromantic. Sometimes it's you look it up. And I love that Isaac did it in a way of being like, I'm not mad. I just, if you're going to be in my life, you have to meet me here in this moment.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that was one of the most cathartic moments of the season for me personally, in a show that's kind of based around giving its viewer cathartic moments. But
Sure.
I really loved that because I still struggle with that. You know, I still struggle with being like, oh, well, my identity is pretty complicated, so I'm just going to kind of not bother. And, you know, people don't really have to put in the effort to understand that, you know? And watching that, I was like, yeah. You know what? If you care about me, maybe you do put in the effort. If I want you to, you know, but still.
No, I and in this society again, there's always the labels, and that's why I kind of said at the beginning that for the longest time, I was identified as a gay man, and of the past year or so, as I started to realize that maybe sexual attraction is different, or what it looks like, or is sex really that great? I'm like 30 years old and my knees hurt. You know what I mean? Like
I'm
sometimes
23 and my knees hurt. It's all downhill from here.
I, yeah, you're literally like just you're like maybe sex isn't that great, but and so that's why I do use queer a lot more because I just feel like it's encompassing, but I do. Now find it's interesting because now when I say queer, I get more people asking, well, what does that mean? When I said gay, they're just like,
Yeah.
oh, we know what that means. And but as soon as I say queer, they're like, well, how do you quantify that? And I'm like, I don't want to quantify it. I don't want to qualify it.
Yes. And I think that's so important because when I was younger, I felt this huge need to explain myself. Like I literally made multiple PowerPoint presentations. I wish I was kidding. I made multiple PowerPoint presentations and I would give them to people to be like, "Hey, here's what's up." Or I would feel really nervous asking people to look stuff up because there wasn't a lot of resources and I didn't want people to look something up and then get the wrong answer, you know? So I felt a responsibility to explain myself for other queer people or for myself or all sorts of stuff like that. And I think I'm getting to a phase where it's like, yeah, not everything is quantifiable. I think that a lot of queerness is about existing outside of labels. Sometimes it's great to have your one perfect Cinderella label that fits you perfectly, but sometimes you just don't have that. And I think that that's another thing that needs to be kind of celebrated. So I really enjoyed that. The whole, we don't have to explain ourselves. We can just sort of exist.
I think my first instance of ever having to deal with having to explain or justify was when I was writing my thesis. And my thesis was specifically on the social stigma that LGBTQ plus individuals have to deal with, like on a daily basis. And there was absolutely no research. And the person, the guy who was in charge of the class for my thesis was like, how are you going to justify this? And I said, and so I had to find a way to build a justification to explain how social stigma builds, like affects people. And it just, to me, it was just like on this academic level, there's nothing. And they
There's
want all this
nothing.
work from us.
Yeah, it's like you have to do the work to explain your own existence in a way that's so exhausting. I mean, everyone else, I think that that's a layer of, I mean, in all axes of oppression that I think that if you are not, if you don't intersect with any axis of oppression, it's really difficult to understand the fact that you are constantly exhausted for having to explain yourself or having to pretend to be somebody else because the effort of explaining yourself is too much, you know? Like there are situations in my day-to-day life where somebody will just like assume something about me and you know I don't know them very well and I don't have time to sit them down and be like actually that's not true. So I just sort of pretend to be that person for a bit. And that could be really exhausting over time, you know? And so yeah, I think there's more research about that now. I sure
I hope
hope there
so.
is.
That was almost a decade ago, so we're fingers crossed.
Well, you know, my friend, I have a friend who graduated recently who's just got their degree in women and gender studies. And it used to just be, actually, I think it's women and gender studies and racial studies, because it used to just be women's studies. And then they've realized there's so much intersectionality that you have to study all these things in order to fully understand it. And so they renamed the major. And I think that that alone maybe means that hopefully academia is getting it to where we need to be, maybe.
I fingers crossed because we need it. We need to, I think that's one of the things that I loved so much about Heartstoppers from like season one to season two is that there wasn't, it was almost, it's almost like a alternate reality in the fact of like there's not a lot of having to explain who you are and your identity because like these are so young kids. And again, we don't see a lot of those young kids because we are in our 20s and 30s here.
Yes.
But I think you've even mentioned before too of kids that you've worked around or you've been around, and they're sometimes they're just getting to be. And I think that this is the first season where we really got to see that some of these characters don't get to just be. Like,
Yeah.
they're starting to have to explain themselves because they're 17, 18, and they're entering this world where it's not just high school and there's not these people who are just understanding and they don't have their support groups anymore.
Yes, I'm really glad you brought that up because we mentioned wanting to talk about that scene with Elle,
Yes.
where she goes from a very sort of, I feel it's like a very protected space in this friend group. And with, I mean, obviously they explored a lot of struggling with family, but for the most part, I feel like family in whatever way, shape, or form can really protect people on this show. It's sometimes. And then we go from that to Elle being on this podcast and just kind of getting. Oh, I love the fact that she says that she thought the person who was interviewing her thought she was being an ally and wasn't necessarily attacking her. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, she's getting attacked in this scene.
Oh yeah. I actually as soon as Elle walked into to the studio, I got this like sense of
I
dread.
felt it. Oh, God.
And I said, the moment they were like, "Oh, the family can stay out there." And I was like, "We are putting this child 'cause like she's still a child.
Yep.
And we're putting her on this platform, which we do to a lot of stars, which I kind of talked about in Smile too, where like we don't always check in with the mental health of these people and like Elle rocketed with kind of fame this season through her art on Instagram, and people wanted to see that. But there was an adult in that room who thought it was okay to be like, I'm an ally. Here's these questions that I'm just going to ask you that are totally inappropriate and totally are going to rock your mental health, and didn't think twice about that.
I think that it's just so. First of all, the fact that this person did not ask her ahead of time, like, hey, I would like to ask you about this specific set of questions about the politicization of your identity and everything like that. Are you okay with that? No, just said, I want to talk to you about your art. And then immediately sprung up with, hey, legislation, and your existence is incredibly hated in this country. And what do you think about that? I also love that they didn't make it into a scene where Elle pulled herself together and she made a really composed answer. She just left because she's a child who's overwhelmed.
Yes.
That was good. I think that there's a lot of other shows who would be like, and this is the strong trans girl who's going to stand up and like have the most perfect speech to say that's going to resolve the situation. It was not that at all. And I think that that's what should have been, you know, like just this, I got to leave the room. This is inappropriate.
Yeah, I think that, like, as looking back as children, we've always, we, especially queer children, that maybe we weren't even out yet, but we had these moments of just being like, we're kids, we have to leave, like, we can't deal with this, like, it's overwhelming. I probably would have had a panic attack, like, just right there. I at my age now, I probably would still have had a panic attack and not knowing what to do, because Elle wasn't expecting that. And I agree with you too. I think it's better that she didn't have the, like, this is why, like the perfect answer, like the perfect, like, studious answer of, like, this is why, you know, trans people should be seen, because you're still a child. Your brain's not functioning at the moment to have an answer for you at that moment.
And also, why is it up to us to always explain that, you know?
Exactly.
Like, what it's and why are you going after, again, out of anybody? Because there are people who make their platform about that. And I thought it was so telling that they showed a scene where it was a girl trying to live her life, but even just her art immediately becomes politicized because the fact that she is existing as a trans girl makes it her existence political and everything she does political. I thought that that was really important to explore, especially because this is based in the UK and gender policy is not good there right now. I mean, it's really not good in the US, but my trans friends who are in the UK are not having a great time. So I thought that that was a really important thing to explore.
I remember a decade ago, and granted, I'm a cisgendered man, but when I went to the UK with my ex and his family, a decade ago, his dad was like, you two cannot hold hands in London. Like that, he was just like, and like that was just me being a cisgendered white man who can pass for the ultimate predator, unfortunately. You know what I mean? Like, and so I could only imagine again, and we see this. We have people like that certain author that I will not say her name that are using their platforms to attack specifically trans women.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's this weird vibe of, oh, if you are trans man or trans masculine, you are a poor, deluded woman. But if you are a trans woman, you are a predator. You know, and both of those things are terrible. And I mean, there's a reason why trans misogyny is it's its own term, because all of that has its roots in various types of misogyny. But it's just, I thought that it was so important to show that in this lovely little show that in so many ways is so healing, it's still a girl who has to defend her existence when she just wants to post her art on Instagram, just because her art explores who she is, which all art does, you know? But you would never see a straight person drawing art about, like, I don't know, their romances or their gender or something like that, being asked, like, and what do you think about the politicization of being cisgender? And this, no, that wouldn't happen.
And I think that they did a really interesting parallel. Again, going back to this idea of, like, having the safe space of what this friend group is. Because earlier in the season, when Elle kind of talks to Tao about, like, how having sex makes her feel, like, dysphoric about her gender, and he handled it really well. And you're just kind of like, wow, you're like a child and you're handling this well. And, like, I think that just helps to, like, kind of, like, again, you see this bubble of, like, you have this really good support group, and then you hit that real world. And I think that's what we kept coming back to this season, is that we're hitting that real world.
I think that's actually a really good point because I think that some of the sort of idealization of Heartstopper is that your friend group tends to react very well to things, or if they don't at first, they come around very quickly. But you're right. It does honestly feel kind of true to life, wherein my friends have been far more understanding than the world around me, you know? Like, my friends take the time to understand things like that. Whereas if I go to work or talk to a stranger on the street, you don't necessarily get that same compassion because they don't know you, obviously. But there's this also this added aspect of, I don't know, kind of dehumanization of like somebody has to know you and be your friend as a queer person in order to kind of care about you sometimes. Whereas there's not necessarily that same element of, oh, I should just care about this person because we should just care about trans people, or I should care about this person because we should just care about gay people. You know, there's not that in the same degree.
And like we see that a little bit with like the real world in ways with like Charlie and his mom, who doesn't quite understand like gayness or like queerness, and like there's definitely a battle between that. And even in this season, you saw that again, but it was more now with the mental health aspect, where I think she was using that kind of justify to be like, I don't know if you should go spend the night at Nick's because you're a kid, but also because you have anorexia, you know, like.
Because you're unwell, which means you don't get to have regular experiences.
Yes. And like again, I think that's like that again, that little bit of that real world kind of trickling in there.
Oh, the family Christmas thing. I was like, oh, I've been there.
Okay, but the scene where the sister Tori shows up at Nick's house and was just like, you left me, and like she's
Yeah.
crying. I was literally like, that hurt so
Oh,
bad, but
no,
like in a
that
good
hurt
way.
me. No, yeah, no, that I have been both siblings in that scenario. I have been the one who's like, I gotta go. And I've been the one who's like, why did you go? I'm still here. You need to stay. And so it was this simultaneous moment of like, oi, I feel guilty, but also I understand. I'm glad that she joined him at the end, though.
I
That was
think that it
good.
really showed Charlie, because I think Charlie struggled with the fact that like he didn't think he had a safe space in his family
Yeah.
because she was always kind of
Yeah.
separated.
Yeah, I really liked how close they felt this season. You know, you had little moments where like she would just go and lie down next to him. And you had moments where again, he has this conversation with her at the end that says, "Hey, I know that you're worried about me and that you care about me. That's great. You're also allowed to have your own life." Because yeah, if my sister was really going through something, that's all I would be thinking about, you know? And so again, it's this aspect of community and family that I'm so happy was there. I was like, these are realistic siblings to me.
Oh, 100%. And you really got that feeling for once. And I was just like, you know, there's Tori has always kind of been there, but always been like in the background. Also, clearly has some bad relationships with food that
Yeah.
I wish they would have touched on a little bit more. I think that there was a little more
Me
connection there.
too. Maybe in the future they will, you know? Maybe in the future they'll be like, and this is actually a family thing. Because it tends to be. So I think that'd be a really cool exploration.
Especially because she's always carrying that cup, you know, that's like the security cup.
Yes. I feel like I really want to dive into her more. She's so interesting to me, as a character, both because she's just, I don't know, we're just starting to see more of her. Like, I want to know more about her relationship with Michael and her hangups and everything. I want to know why she is the way that she is. I'm excited to dig into her more.
Absolutely. We love Tori. We should have, I mean, granted, there's a whole book on Tori and her relationship and being ace. Like,
Yes. Oh my God, I remember that. That was the first book I ever saw about being Ace. It was great.
I haven't read it yet. Is it good?
I also still haven't read
Well, I
it,
guess we
but
have some homework to do.
I know it's sitting on my bookshelf because I went, well, I'm gonna feel a lot of emotions about this. Although I did read one specific section, and I think she does talk about, and I was like, oh God, I feel this. She was talking about being next to a guy and feeling kind of like squeamish and being like, this is probably butterflies. This is what having butterflies in your stomach feels like. And I was like, oh no, yeah. Like that moment where you're really uncomfortable with something, like maybe you're with somebody that you're not attracted to, or maybe you're just not into kissing or sex or anything, and you're like, no, this is fine because this is just how everyone feels about that. No, which I mean, Imogen kind of had that this season, which was great.
Yes.
You know, there's.
I think you're, when you talked about, I just recently watched a video and read an article about how the butterflies and the spark are all trauma responses, and it like blew my mind. Like that, like weird, it's like a trauma response to like we're supposed to feel something right away for somebody, and a lot of times you don't.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Oh my God. Butterflies is a trauma response. I gotta research that. But yeah, it's like this weird trying to get yourself to feel something moment, or trying to recontextualize what you feel moment, I think, of like, oh, I'm nervous. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's good nervousness, or I'm supposed to be nervous. And I don't know. I think that that's also a really important part of being queer is feeling things and not understanding why you feel them, or trying to recontextualize it so that it makes more sense to you.
Yes.
So I really like that a lot of this show lets, and the books and the comics lets people figure things out. Like Darcy figures out their gender over the course of the season, which was
Yes.
wonderful, and I loved that. But they give them a whole season to sort of sort that and to come to their own conclusions, you know? That was one of the things that wasn't really resolved within an episode. And I really liked that because sometimes you don't just have this eureka moment where you're like, wow, this is the perfect. I there's this stand-up comedian I like who had this one joke that says, like, people tend to have when they realize that they're gay, this like beautiful moment of connection with somebody or something like that. Or just like in general, they have like a moment where they're like, wow, this happened. And you find out that your gender is weird, but like journaling. Like, there's never really a moment for most people that I know. It's always just like you journal, you think about it for a while, and then you go, yeah.
I once had a client, and this is I actually use this in therapy still. So I one of my first clients that I worked with in the LGBTQ population was came in and they're like, okay, I'm trans, but let me explain how I got here. And they're like, they were talking about their journey, and they're like, and then I had this lactose moment. I said, what's a lactose moment? And they're like, you know, when all of a sudden you're like drinking, la you're like drinking like coffee with milk in, and all of a sudden you're like, why does my stomach hurt? And then you're like, oh, wait. Like, but like you started, you've like realized this whole time, like my tummy always hurts when I drink my, like this milkshake hurts my stomach. And then all of a sudden you're like, you put all the pieces, you're like, oh, it's always like all the pieces have always been there. The lactose moment.
That's, I'm going to use that. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. Well, yeah, because if we bring that back to Darcy, we see their sort of mini lactose moments leading up to that, like where they have that thing where they're like, don't you hate it when people call you ladies? Like, doesn't that feel weird?
Yes.
And everybody else is like, no, it doesn't. Why would it feel weird? We're ladies. And they're like, I don't know about all that.
Or like the
Which
haircut scene, like
the haircut scene, the second that haircut happened, I was like, I understand what's happening here. It's not, well, I understood for a while, but I was like, this is the nail in the coffin. You are non-binary, I feel. So I
I
loved it.
recently my co-host for Boxy Babes RJ and I saw Some Like It Hot, and in the updated version of the musical they give one of the characters a trans story, and so you know talking with him he was like right away
Wait, that's great for Some Like It Hot. Oh, I love that.
so Jerry ends up being Daphne, and
I love that.
yeah, it was a great story. I did not expect it, loved it. But one of the things that he said is like, you know, I knew right away when Joe said his name was Josephine and Jerry said her name was Daphne. And it was just like this moment of just like, it was not close. You're not pretending. There's like that. And so I felt like Darcy has those moments throughout the season of just being like you said, the ladies, the hair, the clothes just don't feel right. Like the, and then all of a sudden, it just like it like progressively happens until it just was. And I was like, this is beautiful.
Which I love that they continue with Darcy's relationship with the clothes, specifically because I think that a lot of this season has to do with like being in your body and the various ways that that can happen, like being in your body while queer or while having an eating disorder and while thinking about having sex for the first time and everything like that. But this touched back to the end of season two, where Darcy has a fight with their mom because they look like a lesbian, which got to me personally a lot.
You're like
And so
rude.
I was like, hey, listen, as somebody who I dress as all sorts of things, sometimes we fem it up, sometimes we go all over the place. But But still,
But it's
I was
you.
like, but it's me. Exactly. It's always a reflection of me. But my whole thing is that sometimes I don't necessarily like how that contextualizes me in the eyes of other people, because sometimes I want to fem it up. But then for to other people, it's like, cool, this is only a woman. And I'm like, that's part of it sometimes. That's not all of it. And so I really like that it sort of brought that back in with Darcy, of like this idea of, yeah, clothes and self-expression in a way to try to figure out what makes you feel good in your body, what feels like you, what communicates yourself good to other people, but most importantly, what are you comfortable wearing, you know?
Yes. And I love that you said that about this season was really about being comfortable in your skin, because I feel like there's so many instances, both with like gender, sexuality, but just like life, where like people are not feeling comfortable in their skin. And one of the moments I knew from the book that it was coming, and I was like mentally preparing myself, like, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry. I even told my mom, who I watched this with, I said, you're going to cry this episode, is the scene where Nick is talking to his aunt. And in the books, it's with his mom. But this moment of he is not comfortable. And you kind of mentioned earlier, he loves Charlie, but he can't save him. And he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that. I thought that was so important.
And you saw that he looked uncomfortable in his body. Like his like shoulders rolled forward and he just gets so small. And he's a big guy.
He's a huge guy. I loved how much they let Nick, who's again a very big guy, be very visibly anxious in this season.
Yes.
I mean, in general, but like, I love how much they let him really explore all of these insecurities in a way that I feel like in a lot of stories, it would just be about like, hey, here's the one really confident dude who's always there for his partner who's struggling with things. And this, it's not like that at all. And this, it is, hey, here's the guy who's struggling with things. Here's the guy who's also struggling with things, but trying to keep it together because he thinks that his boyfriend's problems matter more than his own. And so he's really desperately trying to seem like he has everything together all of the time so he can be there for him. I thought that that was a really cool direction to explore. And the fact that, again, you're right, like he has this scene where he has to have, because of course he's a kid, he has to have somebody else explain to him, like, hey, how do I be there for this guy in a way that shows that I love him, but also doesn't like destroy me as an individual? I thought
Yes.
that was really important.
And I love that. Like, again, the line in the book is pretty much exactly the same in the show, but the line of just like, you can't love someone's mental illness away.
Yeah. So important. I have tried many a time.
And I think we
work.
all do. I think that like
yeah.
we think that like if we just show somebody enough love, if we just squeeze them hard enough, they're going to start to love themselves. And that's not how it is. And like that's not real of what a mental illness is. Like he is not just dealing with anorexia, he's also dealing with OCD, and like those thoughts are just not going away if you love him enough.
I love that they connected those two things too. I think that's really important, because a lot of people I know who do struggle with eating disorders struggle with it because they have OCD or some another underlying thing about compulsions. So I just thought that was an added layer of, of something I think that can really affect people because it connects to their real life experiences. Because obviously, I don't know. I just like that there was an added level of he gets his diagnosis and we have a sort of understanding of what this is going forward. And they sort of explain a bit about what it is. And it's also just because I think OCD tends to be represented a lot as, you know, the thing where people wash their hands a lot and get really anxious if they don't touch a door three times. And what it actually is, hey, my brain connects all these things together. So if I don't wash my hands a lot, I'm going to contract an illness and then my dad will die. Like your brain immediately jumps there, you know? And so I really liked that they went, hey, OCD isn't just like this silly little thing. It's a thing that makes this guy not want to eat because of how afraid he is of that. Let's explore that. And let's explore how you can't just love it away from him. You know?
Absolutely. And I think that you get to see more of that mental struggle for Nick, especially as one of the other themes of this season is we're like letting go as you're going into the adult world. And we're starting to see these characters, especially in that last episode where they're going to visit the universities.
Yeah.
And one of the saddest moments, I think, in the entire show was where Nick is just laying in bed, not knowing what to do.
Oh my God. I will say, perhaps this is the American in me, but when he looked up how far away it was and it was 4 hours, I was like, you can drive 4 hours and be there? England is small.
Truly, from like one end of the country to the other.
I know, but I completely get that for them that is very difficult to do, and I understand that. But for me, I'm like, it's a 4 hour plane. It was a 4 hour plane ride from my college to my house, let alone a drive,
Oh my
and
gosh.
let alone everything else. F 4 hours, you're gonna be fine, champ. But yes, I completely, I still connected to the rest of that scene. This idea of wanting to, kind of not wanting to make himself an inconvenience, like his own hopes and dreams of his future was an inconvenience. Because he wouldn't be able to be there and support people. And I was like, oh, buddy, you need a sense of self.
Absolutely. Like, he was, again, that champion of like, I gotta be there for Charlie. And all of his friends are just like, you gotta be there for yourself.
Yeah, you can't be there for Charlie if you're not there for yourself.
Yes. Like,
Also, not to
how are
be.
you supposed to be a good boyfriend if you can't be a good self?
Exactly. Also, not to be that person, but I was like, listen, I love you both. I know you end up together. This is your high school boyfriend. Don't change your college based off of your high school boyfriend. I know
Oh,
they end up together and I
yeah.
want them to end up together and it's going to be great and they're always going to make it work. But in my brain, I was like, Nick, we do not make future decisions based off of our high school boyfriend.
Oh, but you remember back in those days where it felt so important. I
Yeah,
mean,
I do. I do.
granted, I didn't have a boyfriend in high school, but in college I did, and it was very much the like the well, when I went for my master's, do I stay closer? Do I go home? Do I do these things? And unfortunately, you do factor some of that in there. And now, as you
Yes.
grow up, you're just like, fuck that.
No, but I absolutely got it. But that was like my auntie moment where I was like, Nick, we make choices that work for us. Come on.
I think the parallel too of like what we kind of saw at the end of last season, beginning with this season, but he has an example of it. Elle and Tao don't live near each other anymore.
Yeah. I loved the exploration of that relationship a lot. I love the fact that Tao was like, oh, I don't have to give us a perfect summer. I don't have to be like every night has to be the most romantic thing in existence. You're not gonna leave me, Th there's an exploration of like security, I think, in relationships in this season because everyone's kind of together now. Nobody's getting new together now. So it's just like, okay, how do we sort out the being there for each other and making sure that we all feel confident in our relationships and with ourselves, So I liked that a lot.
Yeah, no, the there, I love that. Like, there was a sense of like, how do you become secure in a relate like when the world feels insecure, who do you rely on? And I love there's the scene where he's
Yeah.
like, I just want to make this romantic dinner, and Elle's just like, it doesn't it like it's romantic because I'm here with you. Like, pizza can be romantic.
Yeah, pizza can be romantic. It's about the person. I thought that was honestly made the scene far more romantic, because then it was like, oh, we don't have to do anything to prove that this is romantic. We just have to exist with each other and love each other. That was beautiful. I loved that. There's a lot of exploration of that. I mean, we see Darcy and her girlfriend have this exploration of, hey, I live with you. That's great, but maybe also you move with your grandma now because this is a little much all of the time. We talked about that with Nick and Charlie. Just I really liked the fact that this show is just hammering in one person can't fix you. You don't just need one person, and you can't fix another person by yourself. You need to, yeah, and what even is being fixed in the first place? You need to be able to exist within yourself. You need to be able to have a community. And then you can also have like people that you love and cherish within that to different degrees, But I think that that's very important for sure. If I watched this show in middle school, do you know how healed I would have been?
So healed.
So healed. I would have been like, I can't love away my friends' mental illnesses. They can't live away my. Wow! The end.
Who would
We
have
did it,
known?
folks.
And
We did it. Credits start rolling.
I do love that like younger generations get this show. Like, they have
Yeah.
something here to be like, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah. I think that's because at the end of the day, the show really is about how it's going to be okay. you know, which sometimes I very much need, and sometimes I want vampires who do terrible things to each other. It depends on the vibe. But
100%.
this week I really needed that. So I was ill in bed binge watching this and being like, and then Simpson, and it was great. But yeah, I think that it's really important to show younger kids like kind of like a model of, hey, this is a way things can go. This is how you can deal with things. And then also for us to watch it and be like, ah, you
It
know,
hurts.
it hurts. But it's healing.
It is healing, and I love that part of the healing you got to see the season two was with some of the adults. So like we had a relationship with a
Yeah.
therapist.
Which was great. I loved that. I love that you see the moment where he goes from seeing him every week to every other week, you know?
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge. But I love that you see that. And I love that he talks about how lucky he feels to have found a facility that actually works for him. And some facilities don't work for people and everything like that. But which is unfortunately very true. But I really like that we got to see a healthy therapist relationship. And we got to see sort of his stepping stones through that. And even just how he talked about how he, you know, he managed half of his Christmas dinner. Still better than none of it. Let's go.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God, I thought that there's just like, again, as a therapist, you see this and you're just like, these characters need therapy. Sometimes you watch a show and you're just like, this person needs to sit down, and you actually got to see him. And I think that was it's like one of the most healthy relationships he has in the entire show is with
Yeah.
like this guy who's just modeling how to be okay in the adult world.
Yeah, and I think that that's so important. I mean, in the same way that like kids can watch this show and sort of see different ways that they could maybe be okay in the kid world, it's also important to have who to how they can be okay in the adult world, especially as these are it's about kids who are transitioning into adult spaces, you know? And then also for me, that was good for me.
Absolutely.
I should go back to therapy.
I was thinking in my head, I was like, man, I need to go to therapy.
I watched that and I started looking up therapists in my area.
You're just like, I need to go talk to somebody.
I should talk to somebody, probably. That would be good. But,
We
yeah.
also have the relationship between the two teachers, which began last season, but you got to see them just kind of be this like, again, they're talking about like, because the one teacher, oh, Mr. Feud, I think that's how you say his name. He's a new gay boy, you know, and like,
Yeah. Oh, and I love that. Adults can discover themselves too. You
yes,
know?
yes.
I think that was I actually really like that though this show focuses on the kids, there is always adults learning and growing with them. You know, I think that that's really important. Even if it's just the teachers who, you know, they're not in the season a whole lot, but they're still there. And I love that. That is there. I even just love the fact that, oh God, what's that actor's name who showed up for one scene to be hot? Yes,
Jonathan
Jonathan Bailey. I love that even just like, hey, here's a guy who's in one scene and he's made a career about like queerness in ancient Greece and classics.
Bailey.
He's only in there for one scene, but look, here's a queer adult. Isn't that cool? Also, he's
Yes.
really hot and pretty. Good job, Jonathan Bailey, for showing up, being in one scene. Just to be called hot, getting that paycheck, getting out of there. Good for
Do you
him.
know what I just realized? Both episodes, because we're recording another episodes next, have Jonathan Bailey in it. And so this is just the Jonathan Bailey Sunday.
Jonathan Bailey has been rocking it lately, and good for him, as he should. Love that man.
I didn't know who Jonathan Bailey was until I just recently watched Bridgerton with my mom. We watched all the seasons. And then when someone's like, do you know he's gay? I was like,
Crazy
shut the
show to watch.
front door.
First of all, crazy show to watch with your mom, hyphen, I also watched it with my mom.
My mom literally every episode she'd just be like, that's such a great show. And I'm like the first opening scene is literally Jonathan Bailey just having sex with somebody else. And I was like, oh my God, what did I turn on for my mother? And she was like,
Wait,
loved
no,
it.
middle-aged mothers love Bridgerton, and I get it, I do. But anyway, to bring it back, because I could, girl, I could talk about Jonathan Bailey.
So could
But
I. So could I.
right. But I just love that You know, even if they're not the focus, it still shows like an avenue of queer adults. Like Elle has a trans woman art teacher, you know?
Yes.
That's so important, who's there for her and like sets up this interview for her and then goes, I'm so sorry. Like I should have vetted that for you and everything like that.
Yes.
But I really love the fact that it's vocally multiple times in the show stated that it's very important for Elle to be around people who are like her, and that it has shown that she's around other trans people, and that there is an older trans woman, because you never see older trans women, you never see older trans men. I mean, we're starting to see that more and more, but I just loved the fact that she had a role model in her own world, you know, who she could talk to about these things. You know, I think queer role models are a really important part of Heartstopper, I think.
Yeah, and I think that, like, even in ways that they do it where they don't do it, like having Stephen Fry be the headmaster that you never see, but like we all know he's a gay man. Like,
Yeah.
it again just makes this feel so like Mr. Farouk. Sorry, I did mess up his name. I found it, but
Okay. I've completely forgot all the teachers' names, so you're doing better than me.
it's okay. It's okay. Thank you, Wikipedia. But you're right. You have these, like, even like Jack Maddock, who is Jonathan Bailey, like, you have him show up, and it's just this moment of being like, here's a queer man in a world, and you're seeing him thrive in different ways. And these kids are seeing that. I just love it so much. I just love it's like, honestly, like, it's a comfort show. But I did want, this is, I guess, what I'm going to ask you. Is season three also a comfort show? Like, because I part of me is like, I can watch season one and two whenever I'm feeling down, and I don't know if
That's
season
true.
three I could watch when I'm feeling down.
I think it depends on your definition of comfort. Some people like a hurt comfort situation. You know, they really like seeing something very heart-wrenching happen, and then at the end of the day, it's all going to be okay. For me personally, again, it depends on the vibe. In a show like Heartstopper, I think I want it to be okay at the end. You know, I don't think I'm going in there expecting like incredible gothic tragedy. I'm going in there and
Sure.
expecting like, and then we're gonna kiss and make up and it's gonna be okay, right? And then we're all gonna be friends and love each other and it's gonna be okay, right? So
Right,
I
right.
will say I got a lot of good moments for that for season three, but if I wanted to be comforted, I'd probably go more towards season one.
Yeah, 100% that makes sense. Like, there is like a comfort in watching them deal with these real life experiences, but I think it also, again, I watched this with my mom, and she was crying every episode. And not that it's like shocking that she cried every episode, but like, I think like there is like a part where this does pull on your heartstrings a lot more.
It does. I will say there was moments in there was just a couple of moments in season two where I was like, I see myself in that to an unsettling degree. But I will say I'm gonna revise my answer overall. I do think that season three made me more emotional when I think about it. I do think it really very, very much did.
Do you think that
It's
it's because
just
it was closer to like it's closer to the real life experiences of now? Like it's closer to like that adult world?
Yeah, and you know what? I think so. I think that I watched some of season two and I went, this is kind of like me as a kid. And then I watched some of season three and I went, oh, I have that right now. That's a current thing. Oh boy, that's a real current thing. Or even just the fact that it's like there's these young people who are exploring what it means to like, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is a season about sex. But the fact that it's like, hey, sometimes you're just not comfortable in your own body and you want somebody who understands that and is there for you in that. That's the thing I think that people of all ages can relate to, you know? Sex is
Yeah.
weird. What?
Sex is
Why?
weird. Sex, like, literally one time in my life, sorry guys, you're gonna have to hear this. I literally said, sex is disgusting. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Oh my God. I go in and out of being like, I get this, and being like, I don't get this at all.
no.
But
I'd be
and
like,
who does?
when you break it down, it's
What's happening there? Who's to
Yeah.
say? But just the fact that like Elle could say, hey, I love you. I'm attracted to you. I want to have sex with you. I also have a personal relationship with my body wherein I am incredibly dysphoric at times. That's my own personal thing. Yeah, I get that. Oh boy.
Absolutely. And I love that they did this with Charlie too, where he's also saying this isn't just a trans, like it is a trans experience, but it's not just a trans experience, because everybody, like, there's times where I look myself in the mirror, I'm like, I don't like who I am. I don't like what I look like. Mm-hmm. I don't like this. I don't like that. And Charlie also gets to experience that, as like him and Elle are having this like mirrored journey of just being like, we don't like our bodies.
Yeah. I thought that there was so good to explore, and then the different ways that their partners like show up for them there. Like the fact that the first few times that he and Nick do something, he keeps his shirt on, you know?
Yes.
And Nick is totally fine with that. And doesn't pressure him about that at all, you know? I like that. You know, I also like the vibe of them being like, listen, we're teenagers. We think about this all the time. That doesn't mean that we can't be respectful about this.
True. 100%. We're not monsters, you know, here.
We're not monsters. Although, have you talked to a teenager lately?
It's been a while, but...
It's been a while. I joke. I say that just because I'll see people my age and I'll be like, ah, youths. You know?
I will say, I did just drive to an apple orchard yesterday with all three of my teenage nephews, and every song that came on, I was like, oh, this is about sex. This is about sex. And they were all like,
about sex.
Yeah. And they were, and my nephew is just like, all songs are about sex if you think about it. I was like, stop it. You might be 17, but you're still a child.
You are a child. Away from this place. This is not your land. Go home.
Yeah.
But you know what? It is, because they're exploring themselves. I get it. Right. We've all been there. But also, now that I'm an adult, it's weird. Stop that.
Yeah. Especially like, no, just. Go play with Barbie dolls. I don't know. Like,
I don't know. Listen, and from that stance, I do kind of get what the mom's vibe was on, in sense of like, you're a child. You don't get a sleepover with your boyfriend. But also like, I was thinking about it too. And I was like, was sex like this big of a deal when I was that age? Was it the type of like, oh, I have to talk to my friends or me has to talk to people about sleeping over at another place? And I was like, it wasn't that big of a deal. And then I think about it, I'm like, it was. I was just so checked out of it. That it was such a big deal for other people, and then I'd hear about it, I'd be like, okay, cool, you know.
You're like what's that?
What's that? Who knows? But
I think that like yeah, sex was a big thing, but I think that like I get, again, as an adult now, I do kind of get what mom is saying. Like, my mom would never have let me spend the night with a boyfriend.
No,
as a minor, she would be like, no, you're not spending the night there.
Although my sister would have snuck out anyway, I will say that. Which she kind of did end up doing. He kind of just went to Charlie's house, and I was like, you know what? That's a realistic teenage moment. Your mom doesn't say, you can't do this. And then you go, okay, mom. Your mom says, you can't do this. And then you sneak out your window. That's how it goes.
I will say that I thought about the scene in the winter where like Charlie left to go to Nick's. And I was like, if I would have done that, my mom would have been blowing up my phone and shown up at Nick's house and been like, get in the car, you're coming home. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, literally. I mean, I say that, but my sister got away with all sorts of things. My sister came home and announced to the world that she lost her virginity. And we were all like, okay, we're having TV time with this. So good for her. Love that for her.
What a vibe.
What a vibe. My sister is a vibe. We love that for her. But yeah, like in this, I kept watching this and trying to remember what it was like to be a teen and being like, yeah, no, sex was that big of a deal. And in a lot of ways, it still is for a lot of people. You know, it's just this, I just forgot that it's such a discussion at that age. It's, mm-hmm. You talk with all your friends about it and you're like, well, how was it? What happened? Was it scary? Was it good? What was up? And I kind of like that there was moments like that, you know, like where Nick is like, and then all the girls are like, so what happens? So tell us everything, because that's what you do when you're young and you have a relationship is everyone's like, the second that your friend has their first time, it's like a debrief session needs to happen. We all have to sit down and we have to go, was it scary? Was it good? What happened? Do we need to kill him? What's up? You know?
I mean, wait a second. Do we still not do that? Because I feel like
we still do that. I did that with my friend the other day.
Same. On Friday, driving in the car with my friend's like, we need a debrief. And I was like, girl, get your tea.
Yeah, get your tea. But I think when you're little, it's slightly more like, oh, this is the first time anything has ever happened.
Right.
It's, you know, it's not just, oh, was this specific sex occasion good? It's, is sex good as a whole, you know?
Which as an adult, you look back and you're like, wow, you thought that was great. But let me tell you.
I don't think anybody has a good first anything. I don't think that's how that works. Which, you know what? I forget one. Isn't there a scene in this where they said it wasn't like.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved that. Where they were like, oh, who was that? Who said that?
Was it Nick that was just like, it was like, does he say like it was messy? Like,
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I forget exactly the context, but I
It was very
liked
much like this
that.
wasn't great. Like it was good, but it wasn't great.
Exactly. And I, oh yeah, we have a lot of learning to do. I remember it was that.
Yes.
And I like that because, you know, in a show that's kind of like as in a lot of ways as like nice as Heartstopper, where things work out at the end a lot of the time. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes we find a way for them to work out, like whether it's like Darcy is now living with their grandma or something like that, you know. But in a way where you're like, oh, is this going to be the perfect first kiss? Is this going to be the perfect first time? And I like that it was a realistic, hey, I love you, and this was good. We got some work cut out for us.
We just got to make a few changes.
We kind of make a few changes because it's realistic. You're not going to have the perfect first time, even no matter how much you love your partner. That's not how that works. You have this is a skill set you've never done before. Anyway, I liked all the different ways that people explored their relationships with their bodies and each other's bodies and mental illness and being there for each other and everything this season. It felt very cohesive. It felt like everyone was on parallel journeys. That all kind of came together in the end. I loved that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is why it felt like the right growth. And I feel like that's the show is growing. And
Yeah.
I heard the season four is going to be its last. So we're almost to the end.
Okay, well, let's see how it goes. Do we know what volumes that's going to cover?
The rest of five and six.
Okay. Well, yeah, well, because obviously they're making some changes here and there because, I mean, the comics, a lot of times it's just like, here's a problem, we solve the problem. The problem's over now. And,
Yes, yes.
you know, and the show is a little bit more like sometimes we have that and then sometimes we have a seasonal arc. And it sort of depends on the problem.
Right.
Which is, again, why sometimes sometimes I feel like the show is turning to me and being like, do you know this is okay? And I'm like, I do know this is okay. I'm good. And sometimes I'm like, and I needed to hear that that was okay. So I need to be in the vibe for it. But when I'm in the vibe for it, oh my God, do I love it.
Absolutely. And so, unfortunately, we are running out of time, but we'd love to continue the
Okay.
conversation. So, you can check us out on thecosmiccircus.com, or you can find us on Twitter at in other social medias at My Cosmic Circus or our Cosmic Circus podcast at Cosmic Podcast. I always trip that one up for some reason. It's like a tongue twister.
It's difficult. There's so many words. There's so many words in the English
So many
language.
words. Thank you so much for tuning in to Across the Queerverse. My name
Woohoo!
is Brian Kitson, and you can find me on Twitter at Kitson301. See, I'm so glad to have you here. Thank you so much for I like this is the beginning of a beautiful queerness.
We're gonna yap. It's gonna be stellar.
Now, I'm pretty sure I always ask you this, and the people cannot find you on social media, correct?
No, it's if you want to find me, send me a smoke signal. Say gay three times into your mirror, I'll show up behind you like Bloody Mary.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there you go. That's a new one. I don't know, dude. I'm on Discord. If you're on our Discord, you're gonna have to at me, but I'll be there if you at me.
There
That's
you
where you can
have
find
it.
me.
And as always, look forward to our future episodes of Across the Queerverse, and we look forward to our next journey through the gayness.
Yay.
Thank you so much,
All right.
everybody.
Thank
Bye.
you. Bye bye.